Good morning. Welcome to the Sunday, August 14th, 2016 edition of Waking Up, Freeing Ourselves from Work. They stand in the way of love. We will smoke them all with their intellect and their savoir faire. No one in the whole universe will ever compare, for I am yours now, and you are mine. And together we'll love through all space and time. So don't cry. One day all seven will die. And the more I hear him speak the truth, the more I marvel at where did this man come from? Truly, how did you become you or not lose you? We are going to be asking ourselves those questions as we get our you back, get our authentic selves back. Sisters and brothers, as the radio station's tie-in to the internet stream was not working last week, the show we'd planned had to be postponed until today, right now. My son and I recorded a fill-in show, which I posted to the website blog page, audio pages, and the PDF for this show. And if you haven't had a chance to listen to it, stay tuned after this show to hear it. I find myself continuing to think about what Nikola Tesla's inventions to free us from coerced work and state-manufactured scarcity and his inventions prove unequivocally the truth of that last term, manufactured scarcity. I posted an excerpt from the August 2nd, 2015 show, which I hope we will hear afresh, given what we now know from Nikola himself about the gifts he has left us. And we're going to be continuing to think about that in our next show. Quote from Karl Popper: "There's still something missing from our analysis. The contention that Plato's political program is purely totalitarian, and the objections to this contention, which were raised in chapter six," and he's referring to the book The Open Society and Its Enemies, volume one, The Spell of Plato, "have led us to examine the part played within this program by such moral ideas as justice, wisdom, truth, and beauty. And the result of this examination was always the same. We found that the role of these ideas is important, but that they don't lead Plato beyond totalitarianism and racialism. But one of these ideas we still have to examine, that of happiness." It may be remembered that we quoted Crossman in connection with the belief that Plato's political program is fundamentally a, quote, "plan for the building of a perfect state in which every citizen is really happy," unquote. And that I described this belief as a relic of the tendency to idealize Plato. If called upon to justify my opinion, I should have not much difficulty in pointing out that Plato's treatment of happiness is exactly analogous to his treatment of justice, and especially that it's based upon the same belief that society is by nature divided into classes or castes. True happiness, Plato insists, is achieved only by justice, i.e., by keeping one's place. The ruler must find happiness in ruling, the warrior in warring, and we may infer, the slave in slaving. Apart from that, Plato says frequently that what he's aiming at is neither the happiness of individuals nor that of any particular class in the state, but only the happiness of the whole. And in my conversation with my son last week, I'm going to omit what I would normally comment on some of the quotes today because my impression, my immediate reaction to them are reflected in that, in the excerpts from our conversation. So please check it out in the after, right after this show, I'll play them. Plato says frequently that what he is aiming at is neither the happiness of individuals nor that of any particular class in the state, but only the happiness of the whole. And this, he argues, is nothing but the outcome of that rule of justice which I have shown to be totalitarian in character. That only this justice can lead to any true happiness is one of the main theses of the Republic. And unquote from Karl Popper. Let's listen then next in regard to this. I think we will see an excerpt from Savage Continent, Europe in the Aftermath of World War II by Keith Lowe. Quote, while the extermination of the Jews was the most visible continent-wide genocide, there were other equally devastating absences on a local scale. In Croatia, 592,000 Serbs, Muslims, and Jews were killed by the Ustash regime in an attempt to ethnically cleanse the entire country. In Volhynia, after the Jews had been exterminated, tens of thousands of Poles were killed by Ukrainian nationalists. Bulgarians massacred Greek communities in the areas they invaded along the northern edge of the Aegean, and Hungarians did the same to Serbians in the Vojvodina region of Yugoslavia. In many areas of Europe, unwanted ethnic groups were simply driven out of their towns and villages. This occurred all over Central and Eastern Europe at the beginning of the war, as the old empires clawed back the territory they had lost in the aftermath of the First World War. But the most dramatic exodus of an ethnic group occurred in 1945, when several million Germans were driven out of East Prussia, Silesia, and Pomerania by the advancing Red Army, leaving a landscape of ghost towns behind them. During the course of just 6 years, the demographics of Europe had changed irredeemably. The density of Poland's population fell by 27%, and some areas in the east of the country were now barely populated at all. Countries that had once been ethnically mixed had been cleansed so extensively that to all intents and purposes, they now included only a single ethnic group. As well as an absence of people, therefore, there was an absence of community and an absence of diversity. Large areas of Europe had become homogeneous. This process would only accelerate in the months after the war. And that's unquote from Keith Lowe, Savage Continent, Europe in the Aftermath of World War II.